This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two of the program coming to you straight out of our Rally House studios. Rally House, getting you geared up for everything you need to be a fan, whether that's going to the game or just chilling, stone cold chilling at home in your man cave. Maybe it's your tailgate. Yes, nobody gets you ready for the game on game day or every day, like our friends at Rally House and Kansas Sampler. You can find out more at rallyhouse.com.
If you're going to chill, I mean, you might as well stone cold chill, or else what's the point?
That's what I like
to do. Don't half-ass it.
Blair Kirkhoff's brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. They're at I-35 in Santa Fe. He's a big deal. They're a big deal. The number one volume Buick dealer in the country. The number one volume GM dealer in the state of Kansas. That's at Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe, saving you thousands on vehicles right now. Look them up online at robertbrogdon.com. Blair, how are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Yeah. 95 degrees. It must be preseason football time.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly how it works. Good point. Thank you.
I can remember going. There was a game at Arizona. The Chiefs had their preseason opener at Arizona, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, 117 degrees in Phoenix that day.
But they were were they outside?
In Glendale. No, but you had to walk from your car to
2015.
Yeah. Trust me.
All it was, 115?
No, 2015 was
2015. I thought I was off on the temperature.
You're right on the year, though.
It was 117 degrees.
But it's a dry heat. So the heat index was only 112.
I'm going to tell you, when you do live there, the dry heat thing is real.
It is
better. It is absolutely better.
You don't perspire as much.
My oven is a dry heat.
It is. I get it that it's hot, but I am going to tell you, having lived in the desert, you do kind of adjust to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I would assume I'd adjust to Minneapolis, right? But -7 when I was walking into that freaking mall at the Super Bowl,
not so much.
I ain't going there.
That's the one thing about heat. It generally doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
You don't get physical pain from the heat.
Yeah.
Heat doesn't generally cause you to take an hour and a half to drive 10 minutes.
They don't your digits because of the heat. At least not the heat we've created now.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, listen, if you don't have air conditioning, yes, it can be bad for folks. I'm not trying to act like you can't have problems.
But I can get from the door to my car and not go, ah, damn it!
Yeah.
Well, so it'll be a little toasty for the tailgaters tonight.
But, yes, it will. All the more reason to use the Tickets for Less VIP tailgate tent.
There you go.
Let them do all the work. You know, that's what I'm saying here.
Just chill.
Yeah.
Go ahead and chill.
Make them work.
Stone cold chill.
Yeah. There you go. So what do you want to see tonight out of the game? I've been asking that question, so I'm just curious as we go into it. Everybody wants to see Patrick Mahomes run out there, but is there anything specifically from him, from the team, from a player, from a position group, from anything? I've got a couple more I haven't gotten to, but I'm curious. You've been covering this team up at camp a lot. Before we get into the biggest news, which is the new college basketball rules, what do you want to see?
Well, I'll give you a couple things. One, sure. I'll riff off something I heard coming in here. Was it Brother Patrick who wanted to talk Eric Bieniemy?
Yes.
I wanted to, and I thought, you know, good question. I want to see the communication between Bieniemy and Mahomes. Let's see if they have to, if that goes smoothly. In training camp the other day, which Curtis attended, we saw Bieniemy wear the headsets for the first time, working that out, communicating with the quarterback through the headset. So this is his first game as OC. He's been a coach for a long time, but it's his first game as the OC. So it'll be I'll be looking at that. But on the other side, all of a sudden, Armani Watts has become an interesting character because of the Daniel Sorensen injury. And he's going to play more than maybe he would have. And he missed the first week or so of camp and got off to a slow start, but has played well recently. So between him and Tremont Smith, the two defensive backs that the Chiefs drafted, Smith, to me, we've talked a lot about Steven Nelson and the camp that he's had. Tremont Smith has been pretty impressive to me for a guy that we didn't expect much out of coming from a 1AA school. His speed and athleticism is noticeable on the field. So him and Armani Watts are two guys. I heard people talk about Speaks and Derek Nottie and others, but Those are the two guys of the newcomers that I'm going to be locking in on tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I want to see a toughness out of this defense.
Boy,
they preached that around draft time. That's one of the things they said they were looking for in the players that they were getting is they wanted to be more physical, a tough defense. So let's see it. I mean, set the tone. Like, I don't want to be like, well, you know, it's just preseason. Like, if you're gonna punch somebody in the mouth, punch them in the mouth. Let's go. And I don't mean that literally. I just mean if you're going to pop some people, if that's what you want to do is send a physicality, have them hearing footsteps, let them know that you're there, then that starts tonight. Well, it doesn't start week one in L.A. It starts tonight setting the tone of what you're going to be.
I'll add to that, not a false toughness. Not a big hit after the 25-yard reception, and getting up and standing
or
over.
Or trash talk afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, playing good, hard, physical football.
Yep. And Kendall Fuller, was it Fuller that actually said that this week? The tone begins early.
Yeah.
Immediately. Set the tone for the season now. Don't wait till the first game. So.
I think he might be the guy who sets it, too, by the way.
I think he has the ability to do that.
You don't play ball. Virginia Tech is like the Steelers.
That's a good comparison.
When I think Virginia Tech football, I mean, number one, I think a lot of Virginia Tech, a lot like K-State, and how I think they overcome their talent. Not overcome. That's not a great way, because they have good talent. K-State has good talent. They exceed their stars, their recruiting stars. They come together as a unit. They're tougher. They're smarter guys that play better than maybe what their height and weight said they were coming out of high school and what their accolades were. But they are physical, even more maybe than I think of K-State as a physical team. And maybe it's because I saw my school play against Frank Beamer, at least the Beamer VTech, the VTech that Fuller played for, I'm talking about. You know, they're going to hit you. And their corners were always going to hit you. And that's one of the things that you didn't go play DB at Virginia Tech unless you were going to hit somebody. Deion Sanders wasn't getting recruited to Virginia Tech. He wasn't going because he was too high up the list anyway. I get that. But that's not who they were looking for. They were looking for guys that were going to come and put a lick on you. And I think Fuller might be that guy. You might see him come up, come through the offensive line, through the trash, and just take a running back out right at the legs. You know, one of those diving, boom, helmet right on the shoulder pad right on the thigh and just de-cleat a guy or, a receiver catch the ball on an underneath one or maybe even, somebody else's receiver catches it and you see him just pop a guy.
You mentioned it before. It is kind of Steelers-esque what you're describing. It's what they do. And to speak to your Virginia Tech point, I think they've had the same defensive coordinator.
Yeah, they have.
From through Beamer and now through Justin Fuentes.
His name. Let's give him some love because he's really good.
Bud Foster,
yes.
Yeah, he's the lunch pail guy.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I think it's a really good and apt place to aspire to if for any football team, because you're right. And how many D-backs has Virginia Tech put into the NFL?
A ton.
So I think those are good points, and that's certainly a theme from the Chiefs from last season to this season. And part of that too is, and Fuller would be he would be part of this, to see Marcus Peters not tackle last year was there's no denying his takeaway talent, but him not tackling, it's something you have, from being in training camp for a couple weeks, you hear players and other people talk about how much that bothered the team last year, that he wouldn't put his body out there. So that speaks to I think a toughness that this defense needs to show and project. And Bob Sutton's on the line a little bit here too.
So I
don't know if this has to come from him. Sometimes it does come from coordinators. I think this time this has to come from the players.
I think if the Chiefs are going to become a tough football team the way the Pittsburgh Steelers are, two positions stand out to me where that toughness really shined for Pittsburgh. And it's the DBs. Their safeties were hitters. Their corners were tough and would come up and tackle. And it's their wideout toughness. Mm. Like, I think of Hines Ward breaking the jaw of, who was it, the Bengals linebacker from, he was a first or second round pick and played there for like a decade or so. But was he a Colorado guy? I can't remember who the hell it was. But on what is now an illegal hit. Back then was legal, the one where the tackler's running and doesn't see him coming, and he comes back with a crackback and broke his jaw. I mean, Hines Ward, he was out there looking to really just wreck somebody as a blocker. And those hits are being taken away, but You know, Sammy Watkins supposedly said to Andy Reid.
Keith Rivers.
Is that who it was?
It was like 2008.
Yeah, it'd be Keith about the time of the Super
okay.
Bowl team.
That wasn't the linebacker I was thinking of, but that's it.
It was the Bengals. You had the right team.
Yeah, I knew it was a Bengal, but I guess I wasn't who I was thinking of. But yeah, he broke his jaw on a crackback block. You know, Sammy Watkins talked about blocking, and Andy Reid talked about his blocking. And if you're going to run those bubble screens, then a guy who will do more than just give a little push, right, but will come up, engage, lock in, and when the receiver goes by, is still blocking him. Is still locked in. Is not letting go. He's got a hold of the inside of the shoulder pads. He's cheating, and he's locked on, and that guy's not getting away. I want to see that, and I think that mindset has to start today.
And for especially for a team that runs as many bubble screens as this one does,
yes.
It uses the tight end like it does.
It's a chance for those receivers to get in there and get physical. All right, Blair Kirchhoff is with us from the Kansas City Star. Blair, let's talk about the new rules, and it's going to take a little bit of time because there's a lot of them to get through. When you saw them, what was your first reaction?
My first reaction was, well, I guess the NCAA is going to deliver on the promise that it made back in April when Condoleezza Rice sat at that podium at the table. I think she had Grant Hill and David Robinson on either side, so you had the two luminaries sitting, next to Condoleezza Rice. And then in the press conference after that, Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, said, we're going to take these recommendations and we're going to start implementing them before the beginning of the following school year. And we were all like, no, of course you are. And nothing ever happens that fast in the NCAA. Certainly no reform, rule change.
Right.
It's just physically impossible for that to happen with all the red tape that has to be cut. And but here we are, here we are in early August before classes have started at schools, and the NCAA backed up what it promised to do. And I think, first of all, the fact that there was an announcement that presented changes and presented changes in a way that didn't say pending NCAA President's Council approval. They said, no, this is happening. We're going to make some changes. The ones that the NCAA can control, like enforcement, investigation, where it doesn't need the cooperation of the NBA Players Union or the NBA, they're going to change right away, and it's going to start for this school year. So I applaud the NCAA for that. There was a moment of crisis in college basketball last September with the announcement of the FBI investigation. The NCAA, a month later, reacted to that crisis by saying, we're going to do something about it. Mark Emmert got Condoleezza Rice to inform the committee. The committee presented its findings in April, and by August, less than a year later, change is going to happen. Whether you agree with the change or not, whether you think these are measures that are going to work, whether you agree with the language of them, at least the NCAA acted. They didn't wait for something to happen. They didn't wait for the NBA or the Players Union to change the one and done. They went out and made the changes themselves. And for that, I think they deserve credit. Now, what I saw yesterday, after I started to hear some of the reaction from people, was it's not enough. It didn't go far enough. And I saw a lot of criticism from our friends in the who are national college basketball writers, and I thought, I want to hear what the blowback is, what the criticism is, but I didn't agree with all of it.
Okay, so but here's what I would say, and maybe in time we'll get this discussion, because it's a lot. They threw all this stuff at us, and
there's about five or six major things that happened yesterday.
And the guy who's really, he's really. I think he's surpassed Dick Vitale as the national conscience of college basketball, and it's Jay Billis.
Sure.
Good or bad, right or wrong, whether
I agree.
You like him or not, because he is active in the social media is a big part of it, and that's a big part of the landscape today. You've got to at least play a role in that. And Dick Vitale, as near as I could tell, maybe he's on it. I don't know if he is or isn't. I've never heard of his.
Used to be in a bigger way, but not as much these last couple of years.
So
and not an advocate, or not like Jay is.
Well, and not willing to criticize.
Right. That's right.
You can't love everything.
Right.
If you're being honest, you just can't. And so I think Jay Billis is a really important figure. Trust me, And if you're like, all Syracuse people think Jay Billis hates him. So just know he's like public enemy number one for all my Syracuse brethren that are out there. Like, Jay Billis going to crap on us every chance he gets. You know, he just loves his Duke. And, you know, so it's not like he's beloved. Everybody, all national guys.
Right.
The Joe Buck or Jack Buck. Joe Buck. Phenomenon. You know,
Here,
but everywhere. Really, everybody hates him.
Don't lump me in with my kid.
Because when you do
He's not a winner.
Everyone's used to these homer broadcasts, which are great at home, but the national broadcasts aren't homers. So when your guy's not, when he doesn't kiss your ass the whole time.
Not loving you up.
Or celebrate somebody else, you hate him. I get it.
We know how it works.
I'm not gonna try to change anyone's opinion on. But so Billis carries a little bit of that, but I think he's an incredibly thoughtful guy and very passionate and caring about the game of college basketball. But I think he's kind of a harumph. You know, he kind of just bitches always.
I didn't see his criticism about this in particular.
Well, and all I'm going on is what I heard him in his conversation with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter, on the 11 o'clock SportsCenter. And Scott Van Pelt's a huge college basketball fan, and I like him. And they talked about
it. Maryland guy,
yeah. But appreciates, you know, the history of Allen Fieldhouse and all the great venues. You know, he's not anti-Duke because he went to Maryland or anything like that. And he seems to, I think, have a very honest opinion of what Maryland basketball is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not one of those guys going, we were the equal of Kansas until blah, blah, blah. No, they didn't. No, the guy who invented the game never coached your place. And no, you weren't. So I was really looking forward to their conversation because I knew they're two college basketball guys. I expected Billis to be a little bit negative, and he was all negative. And to his credit, he said, listen, these are well-intentioned, well-meaning people. But he's like, I don't get the point of – and I agree with him. I don't get the point of the rules being just for the elite.
Well, that is one of my problems was – and that's as it regards to the NBA draft.
And I'm curious as to – I want – To ask questions of the people who put this together. I want to ask questions of Mark Emmert and say, why did you just stop here? Why only these people? How do you plan to enforce it? But before I just go, dumbass, you know, like let's give him a shot to say, listen, here are the hurdles that are there. The immediate hurdle that was pointed out by Bill Self. It was pointed out by John Calipari, who ESPN is down with their SEC network. On his bottom, as they play a paid-for exhibition series in the Bahamas.
They got another one of those
coming
up?
Yeah, they're down there doing it again.
It's the second one in about
doing
5 years.
Yeah.
That's better in the Bahamas.
And I will say this. I did see an incredible thing. I follow all these different SEC and Big 12 schools on all these different platforms, as you do. You get all these alerts and everything. Oh, yeah. And one of the alerts I got from Kentucky basketball was they had about a three-minute video, and I actually sat and watched it. One of the things they're doing down there is they went into a neighborhood where kids don't have shoes. The Kentucky team did. And it wasn't just Nike. All brands of shoes. They had all these shoes, tennis shoes, for all these kids. And they're giving them to the kids. But you know what they did first? All the Kentucky players were sitting in a row, and in front of them they had a bucket. Or a pail or kind of a flattened pail and water and then some kind of chemical that they were pouring into the bucket. And the kids would sit down and the players would wash the feet of the kid that came in who had no shoes. Wow. Now, if you're of the religious nature, I'm not asking you to be or not be.
Yeah.
This will be something symbolic to you if you follow it. They washed the children's feet, dried it, tried on shoes, found the shoes that fit, and the kids left with new shoes.
I'm down with that.
Yeah. I was like,
I'm not religious, and that certainly moved me.
Yeah. You know, and forget about the religious implications that come with it. Just the act of washing another human being's feet is a very
or maybe or was it an island customer or
I don't know.
But it was the
chemicals that they were putting in seemed to be some kind of cleaning agent. It was not a bubble bath. It seemed to be something that's like we're going to what do you say? We want to kill germs,
disinfect
or whatever. I mean, it seemed to be like listen, we're gonna want to take care of them, mm-hmm. But to watch these young men. Many of whom are going to be millionaires in the NBA next year, wash the feet of these impoverished children. And then it always ended, and one guy was joking around about the cameras that were there. He's like, ah, the camera's really bothering you, isn't it? And yeah, a little bit. And yeah, I talked to them, and they'd get done, and they'd have their new shoes, and they'd give them a fist bump, and the kids were giving them hugs and everything. So a little side of, you know, is Kentucky part of the massive money machine? The biggest example of it, yes, absolutely, 100%. The biggest example of the money machine that is college basketball. But let's do remember, and this is where I'd like Jay Billis to take a moment. And I'm sure there are going to be those that are going to say, well, Calipari just did it as a photo op to get some. I don't care. Kids who didn't have shoes have shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
Young men who have been told they're the best in their class and the best of the best and are just waiting to get to the NBA washed the feet of another human being. There was a life lesson that occurred there. There was a moment that occurred there. Let's take a moment to acknowledge that. And I think there is, like you said, a moment needs to be taken. Let's dive in and say what works and doesn't work, but let's acknowledge the effort made. And then the things that we don't agree with, the things that are going to be difficult, that we don't understand why, let's spend some time to find out and talk to them and say, okay, is there a reason for this?
Well, and keep working toward, you know, solutions that you perceive to be problems in the game. Again, I credit the NCAA for identifying a problem, finding a solution, implementing the solutions. Did it go far enough? We'll see. I mean, we don't know. They haven't had a chance to work yet. I did see some criticism yesterday. The Billis, like I said, I didn't see the Billis Van Pelt interview, but Jay's biggest concern always has to do with money. You know, he gets riled up with, you know, when some coach signs a big contract or somebody's big money's exchanging hands, and Jay's comment is always, oh, and you can't pay the players, and there's not enough for the players. Mm-hmm. I get that. I know where he's coming from. He's entitled to that.
But he is a bit of a one-trick pony.
It is, at least on Twitter, it seems to be. But he also, he's an incredibly thoughtful person who I think cares about college sports. And I think if college basketball had a commissioner, he'd be a strong candidate to be the commissioner of college basketball. So I have a lot of respect for him. But other people who weighed in on this yesterday, I was kind of shaking my head. You're tearing it down. You're not giving it a chance here. I get that it does seem odd that the having players go through the draft, not drafted, and come back to their teams would only have impacted five or six players last year, including Malik Newman. You know, there was a very small. Now, it only includes people who were, you know, invited to the NBA Combine and have been certified by another group. That seems to be short-sighted.
I agree, and we can go over some of the problems.
Yes, I mean, why doesn't that include anybody? Why wouldn't it? And I get the coach's problem with, you know, not understanding what your roster makeup's going to be because of this and having an issue. So that's one of those little nits to pick, I think, with what I saw yesterday. But generally speaking, what they're trying to do is get the bad guys out of recruiting and, you know, tell schools that they're going to be held accountable, more accountable for their actions, and punishments are going to be greater, and college presidents and athletic directors are basically right. going to be held more accountable for this.
Yeah,
for
let's
this
talk
stuff.
About that. Let's do that. We'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about the accountability that's going to be there now. One of the things that I think is not getting enough credit for what's out there. We'll do that next with Blair Kirkhoff. He's brought to you by Robert Brogdon, Buick GMC.
All right, the Tavern, end of the hour answer to a question that was a lot better when I first thought of it. What was the last year the Chiefs went unbeaten in the preseason? For a long time, this was one of the ones I really liked because it was 1969.
You just like the number 69, like the morning show? Is that what it was?
Yeah, because it was also 66 and 60. One of the first two of those years, he went to the Super Bowl. But the Chiefs went unbeaten in 2015 and kind of spoiled the fun of that question. But when I first said it, I was like, "Oh yeah, that's right." 3 years ago.
So the answer is 2015.
2015, including the 127 degree day that Blair spent in Glendale, Arizona.
There you go, Blair. A trip down memory lane. The Tavern is what we were playing mm-hmm. for. I'll be there this weekend, as a matter of fact. Classic American cuisine, stylish atmosphere, best service you're going to find anywhere.
Which one?
I'm going to be
both.
The one at Mission
both
Farms.
Are,
they
okay.
are, yeah. Tavern in the Village. That's my mom's home tavern, tavernintheVillage.com. And Tavern at Mission Farms, right there in the Mission Farms development at about 435. And Mission Road, there is no exit off of 435 and Mission, at least right now.
That's
are they
right.
adding one with the
Boy, that's
the
a good question.
Going on?
I don't know. But you're right. You cannot get on Mission from 435 yeah. right there.
Which actually I like. Because I wouldn't be getting off on the highway, but it makes that interchange a little bit easier to deal with mm-hmm. than having traffic pouring off of it. Although the folks that get off at Row and Knoll and State Line might be like, screw you! Could use a few less cars. All the Mission people getting off at our exits. But the tavern's a great spot, and Kelly and his staff do such a phenomenal job. So go see him. If you want a great night out, whether it's with the fellas, date night, or taking the whole family, it's Tavern at Mission Farms and Tavern in Prairie Village. Blair Kirchhoff is with us here in the program, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. I said we would pick up, let me look at my note here, what good came from it, and accountability is one of them. One of the things that I love that I really wish, like I said, on a national scale, the national guys didn't hit upon that I think is just giant. I think this is giant, and it's just kind of being swept under the rug, that presidents and chancellors
yes, yeah.
are now going to be held accountable.
They were. That was the first, if you've got the printout of the NCAA or if we can call it up, that was like the, that was the first part of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Presidents and presidents, chancellors, and athletic directors are now, you know, basically on the hook for this. For if your school
now,
screws
how are
up.
They on the hook? What
well,
are you
we don't
suspend
know.
Them?
We don't. But
I'm
never
not
been,
sure, but I love the concept.
It's never been expressed like this before.
Right?
We'll see. I mean, there'll be some. Who knows with this FBI investigation? Well, there may be some test cases coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah.
But that was that caught me too. That wow. And someone suggested. I don't know where I read this. And I didn't think about it. But that's it's almost as if. The NCAA has created subpoena power here by holding them this accountable for, you know, for the actions of their schools. That they've got to turn over, you know, they've got to talk, they've got to turn over evidence. They have to cooperate.
It's now part of their contract that they have to cooperate. It's not that like, no, you're not the government, I don't have to. No, if you're going to be a part of this, you got to cooperate. To which, let me ask this question. Presidents and chancellors, and I don't even know what they're going to do to them. Right? What can they do to, like, if I'm not mistaken, like Dr. Girard is a state employee?
Yeah,
is
yeah, not? Right. Hired by the Board of Regents.
Board of Regents, which has state. You know,
I don't know. I thought about that too. I don't know either what jurisdiction is here. You
right.
Know?
Right.
Can they not apply? You know, part of a penalty to a school based on your president should have.
Been fired,
and if you don't
fire your president, then it's 2 years.
If it's such an egregious problem, right?
So one of the things I like to do is, and I said we need to take some time and think through how this is going to play out. There no doubt will be things where they go, well, that didn't really work. We had good intentions, but it doesn't work. So let's tweak it. That's how rule books get bigger and bigger and bigger. And they're trying to tackle a massive undertaking here, and what they're doing. But one of the things I did think about that may be, you know, a lot of times there are unintended consequences. By putting the presidents and the chancellors on the hook, and everybody says it's the presidents that are really the ones that are in charge of these TV contracts and the conference
That's
realignment
right.
and everything.
It's certainly in the Big 12.
So does that drive them out of the NCAA? Is this perhaps the beginning of the end of the NCAA and their jurisdiction over the highest levels of college athletics? And a new D1 will be formed, and it will be formed without the NCAA because no president is going to have the NCAA tell them that they're going to penalize them. No chancellor is going to do it. And this may be where they go, you've outlived your usefulness, and you are still useful perhaps for Boise State, certainly for Pitt State and Northwest Missouri State. I mean, because in a sense, isn't that the NAIA, right? The NAIA doesn't have the revenue that the Division II and III's have, generally mm-hmm. speaking.
Yeah, generally speaking.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so the NCAA moved away, and the NAIA is there for the smaller schools. Well, you know, why is the NCAA managing? And I know why when you talk to the commissioner of the MIAA and the monies that come down and help them run their tournament and make it better. I do like the idea of them all being together. But I can see where right now the presidents get together and go, no. The time is now. We break away. Let's at least start beginning to figure out how we're going to put on a basketball tournament without these other schools, because they don't generate the football money, and we're now leaving. Could this be the beginning of the end of the NCAA having jurisdiction over the Big 12 and the Power League?
Well, I think if you make that argument, part of the argument is—
I'm not making the argument. I'm asking the question.
Okay. If you're asking the question, then I think the other question should be, do you support cheating? Because I think the NCAA is asking its presidents to help them curb cheating, is what it, you know. And if you don't help us curb cheating, you know, we're gonna hold you at some level of responsibility here.
But I don't think that's— it's not just asking them to help.
It's taken it to a different level.
Yeah.
Based on the language in this, you know, in this— I wish I had it called up. In the release yesterday. I don't. To me, the response from a school isn't to turn around and say, you know, screw you, NCAA. We're gonna create our own rule book and our own divisions and go our separate ways. I think the reaction at the president level— well, maybe I'm Pollyanna about this. I think it should be, yes, sir, we will absolutely help. We'll absolutely help clean up our sport. That sport that's embarrassed us, you know, with this FBI investigation. So, if there's an impetus to change organizations, to create an organization separate from the NCAA for the power schools, I don't think it would be because of this. I think it would be because of TV money. I think because, you know, 60 schools will realize that there's more money to be made on their own, you know, in some sort of breaking away from basketball and just having their own football organization. That to me would be the incentive to not be part of the NCAA. The biggest incentive to not be part of the NCAA, not to say to the NCAA, we disagree with what you're with this you know, pressure that you're putting on us to keep our programs clean.
The aspect of the guys being able to come back, that's what gets all the hype, right? Guys being able to go into the draft and come back.
Yeah, if they go undrafted and
immediately the subject, the point was brought up, which has been brought up for a long time, and the idea of letting guys come back is, well, what do we do if there's no scholarship for them?
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the problem.
And that's a handful of guys that it will affect.
It is. It's just a small population.
Although it's a bigger population than people think. And I hear everyone say, well, why are we just doing this for the kids that get invited to the combine?
Which was 69 people last year.
Well, it's so that 5,000 kids don't put their name in the draft just hoping that they get drafted. It's to slim down the pool. And I heard last night the conversation about, well, you know, the kid from Maryland, I don't think got invited to the combine, who went in the first round, the 6'8 shooter.
Yeah.
I thought Van Pelt said he did not get invited to the combine, and then he just blew up in workouts and stuff like that. So he wouldn't have the opportunity. Listen, there's going to be no perfect scenario. I got, when you dig a little bit, like, why just these kids? Well, because if every kid declares for the draft every year, that's not going to happen. I got it. But if you're at Kansas, I mean, 9, 10 of your guys might declare every single year. And then if one of them does blow up and they go, that is a lot of scholarships to have to replace. Now, I'm of the opinion, you know, I believe with what Dan Wetzel said when he's like, you make $5 million a year, tough, figure it out, right? I agree with that. But I get where they're trying to put a limit on, look, what's the point of some kid who really has no shot of getting into the draft holding the school at bay? Do we or don't we give the scholarship?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, the timing is one and the roster size is another. But basketball is the only sport where you declare for a draft, right? You know, in other sports, you just drafted. You don't declare. You're either good enough to be in the draft or you're not. You don't have to formally apply for the draft in football or baseball or ice hockey. You're either good enough to be drafted or not. So to me, I don't see where this is a big problem. And let's just take a roster like Kansas or Duke's or Kentucky's or somebody that's going to, in most years, have multiple guys taken in the draft. Maybe I'm not appreciating this problem more than as much as I should. But is it a big concern for Bill Self to, if there was no declaration for the draft, like all of his guys were eligible for the draft, and don't you have a pretty good idea who's going to get drafted and who's not going to get drafted? The Maryland player notwithstanding, yeah. LeGerald Vick wasn't going to get drafted. We didn't think he was going to get drafted, and he didn't get drafted. It just seems to me that this shouldn't
the
be
Malik
that.
Newmans are the either ors kind right, of right. guys. I mean, there's probably 10 guys that we know are the uber elite. There's 30 guys that we know are going to get drafted, and then there's 200 guys who could fill out those final 20 spots.
I guess I'm saying, is this a major problem for
Kevin Werder? Is that the kid? Yeah, thank you, from Maryland.
Would this be a major problem for college basketball?
It would at the upper levels. It would at Kentucky and Duke, but I don't care. Figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out.
Or quit. I don't really give a blank. I mean, that one for me is like, this is a rule that works for the greater good. So on the uber extreme end, you got to figure out how to make it go. I don't really have any, you know.
There was some outrage.
Sympathy for Bill Self or anybody right. out there that's got to figure out the scholarship game.
There was some like national outrage about this particular one, and I just didn't bother me. This one didn't. This one, I thought, come on.
All right, I want to talk when we come back about the USA Basketball part of the equation. I love this faux outrage. Nobody contacted the USA Basketball. Oh my God. No one even called them.
It's the first people I call for any decision.
The USA Basketball was not made aware that they're going to take their rankings that they already publish and use them. Oh, my God. Nobody called them. We'll get to the bottom of this blasphemous act by the NCAA next here in the program. You're listening to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Blair Kirchhoff in with us here on a Thursday, brought to you by Robert Brogdon Buick GMC, I-35 in Santa Fe, online at robertbrogdon.com. Kansas's number one volume GM dealer is Robert Brogdon Buick GMC. USA Basketball, Blair, they're going to use the USA Basketball rankings to determine who the top players are. And I heard this faux outrage. Nobody even called them. Who cares?
That's right. What do they care?
Right. I remember the Associated Press said, hey, listen, we're taking our poll out. You cannot use our poll to determine the national championship because that's not what it's here for.
I remember that.
Fine. USA Basketball can try that again. And you know what? If they do, I will look to go punch somebody in the face from USA Basketball because you're United States Basketball. I can't believe this outrage. Wait, you mean U.S. basketball has to do something for American basketball players and American college players? Those sons of, like, they should be, they're
how dare you?
The head of U.S. basketball better have their freaking arm in the air wanting this. I mean, do they not understand how U.S. soccer works? Do they not understand how basketball and soccer and all other sports work globally? Your national federation has got their hands all over.
Sure.
Everything going on in that sport in your country. I'm hoping this is just short-sighted. I didn't really think this. I'm hearing from some of these guys.
I didn't see a quote from USA Basketball. All I saw was USA Basketball wasn't consulted, and from that I saw, you know, how could you not consult? You know, that's what I saw. So maybe cooler
heads. Let me go a step further. How about if USA Basketball wasn't so cowardly, sitting on the sidelines as just a pawn and stooge for the National Basketball Association? We wouldn't be in this mess to begin with had they taken control of it a long time ago.
Yeah, look, the whole minimum age rule in the NBA, the NCAA had nothing to do with it. It just happened. And I've always said this: it was great for a couple years because we got to see Kevin Durant and Greg Oden and a couple other guys. And it's just become a big problem. And it's basically the NCAA it's happened to the NCAA. They didn't want it. It's just they had to deal with it. And so now the NCAA is making some rules up or creating some rule changes. Other people are going to have to deal with it. And I think it's a little turnabout fair play.
Listen, if I were an NBA franchise right now, I'd be starting club teams and be looking for talent
I've thought forever that should
I think it will come, and I think college basketball will be greatly minimized.
If there's no money in it, start IMG academies all over the country. If there's no money in club teams, I mean, create an outlet for that.
I think it's coming. The growth of the minor leagues, it's coming, and I think the minor leagues will beget the club teams. And that kind of thing. So I do think it's years off, but I think it's coming.
Needs to happen.
There needs to be a better as long as though that college basketball is going to provide the minor leagues for the NBA, there needs to be a better symbiotic relationship, and they need to be able to work together, and they can't be sitting around at the whim of the NBA as to whether or not a guy does or doesn't have to go to college. And that's where USA Basketball needs to be that bridge.
Yeah.
And what is the NBA going to do? Well, we're not going to let them play for the U.S. anymore. Well, they're playing for other countries. Yeah. And yeah, do you not want to market it?
Try using that one.
Do you not want to market it? And let me tell you about the reaction you'll get from the rest of the country. I was stunned to hear this outrage over the fact that USA Basketball hadn't been. Like, USA Basketball, to me, has been sitting on the sidelines and should have been at work at this for a long, long time. And I just, that one, I was like, you're just bitching to bitch now, man.
Well, I wonder, you know, except for when Olympic tryouts take place, who knows what USA Basketball is? I mean, what presence does it have in the game? It doesn't seem to have any kind of legislative presence. You don't hear much from USA Basketball. The national teams all come from USA Basketball. The team that Bill Self coached this past summer, the 18 and under, where Quentin Grimes had the great tournament.
It's becoming more and more.
Had the FIBA's the FIBA tournament. That was great, but that was USA Basketball. Well, now they've been pulled into this argument, and maybe it'll wake them up a little bit. You know, maybe USA Basketball will kind of take a stand here and be something more than just the organizer of national teams. I agree with you. In other countries, the national organization kind of controls things, runs things.
Yeah.
It's not the case in this country.
No, and I think this may be the NCAA dragging them into the mix, mm-hmm. and forcing them to play a role. I mean, if you're going to have a college basketball minor league, which is what we have, then they've got to listen at the NBA level to what your professional league has to listen to what is going on in your minor leagues. And
yeah,
I think this is a good start. And it'll be messy. They'll bump their heads on different things. There'll be problems. Yes, but it at least begins where we might get some kind of – if you love college basketball, USA Basketball needs to get in the middle of things.
Agreed.
Simple as that. Blair, great stuff as always, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds good.
We talk football next. Nate Taylor from The Athletic coming in.